This episode may contain graphic content. Listener's discretion is advised. You are now listening to Slavery Still, a Juneteenth special brought to you by Outside the Culture.
South Carolina restaurant manager accused of enslaving a black cook for years has pled guilty to forced labor. This is regarding Bobby Paul Edwards. He's a 53-year-old white male. He's admitted he used violence, threats of intimidation tactics to force John Christopher Smith into working 100 hours a week without pay at Edwards Myrtle Beach Buffet Restaurant, J&J Cafeteria. There have been different local accounts of what exactly happened. Some are saying he was unpaid. Some were saying he was paid, but it was less than $3,000 a year. By all accounts, he was working way too many hours for way too little pay, if any. It seemed he was also being forced to stay in a very broken down apartment. Edwards reportedly beat him with a frying pan, burned him with grease fryer dipped tongs, beat him with his fists and his belt buckle, and routinely used the N-word while speaking to him. This finally came to a stop after a longtime restaurant patron noticed that there were scars all over Smith's hands, and he alerted someone to it. Allegedly, Smith's family would come by, and Edwards would hide him and not let him see them or not let them see him even. This, apparently, Smith had been working there since he was 12, but this period was when Edwards was the manager between 2009 and 2014. John Christopher Smith, who sometimes goes by Chris Smith in local outlets, had said, "I wanted to get out of there a long time ago, but I didn't have nobody I could go to. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't see none of my family."
This is such a crazy story.
Ain't that some shit?
That is crazy.
How the hell? I have so many questions. Because they talking about back in 2014. And I'm just trying to think about what I was doing back in 2014.
I was in college for a year. That was around the time of Eric Garner shooting.
Okay.
That was 2014.
2014. Wow.
And the whole time, this man, this black man, been locked up in a restaurant. So it says when he was a child, he was working for the mom and pop that owned the restaurant. And allegedly, they treated him right. Somewhere in the midst, they stopped working there. The son took over. And the son was basically just a cracker.
So what I want to know is, and I'm not blaming anyone, of course.
I'm blaming that white man.
I'm definitely blaming him. You're right about that. I'm more so like, how did his family not know he was, like, where did they think he went?
That is a good question. It's something I was thinking about, too.
Like, where did they think this boy just went? Like, okay, he was working for this mom and pop shop. Okay, was he coming home? Like, was he living there when he was working for them? Like,
and he does, he is differently abled.
Okay. All right.
So maybe it was a situation where the parents, his parents may not have been able to take care of him. And, you know, they were giving him a job and a place to stay. So maybe, you okay. know, they just, and maybe they did come to see him when the mom and dad were in charge. And then maybe after the son took over and he stopped letting them, you know, started hiding him when they would come around. And then maybe that's when they stopped seeing him and got, I don't know. Let me pull up this story. So it's so interesting because it said in here, Smith started washing dishes and bussing tables at J&J in 1990 when he was 12. He loved his full-time employment there when the business was operated by Edwards' relatives. But when Edwards took over in September 2009, paid wages and decent treatment would soon be non-existent. Edwards moved Smith into a roach-infested apartment he owned that Smith's attorneys later described as subhuman, deplorable, and harmful to human health.
Oh my gosh.
Smith was forced to work more than 100 hours each week without pay and no days off as Edwards took advantage of the black man's mild cognitive disability, court records state. Edwards' reign of terror included keeping Smith isolated from his family, threatening to have him arrested, and calling him racial slurs. Smith said he felt like he was in prison with the threat of death. Most of the time I felt unsafe, like Bobby could kill me if he wanted, he said, according to court records. I wanted to get out of that place so bad, but couldn't think about how I could without being hurt. I'm going to read further in a minute, but I got to stop right there. If that don't sound like the motherfucking slaves. Talking about the senseless violence. Having any sort of connection to society or any sort of a social life. Living under the threat of death. That is insane.
That's mind-boggling to think. 2014. This black boy, beautiful black boy with this mild cognitive disability is being treated unfairly. Is a modern day slave.
And it's so crazy because it's like, one thing that is a part of my journey on this show is learning about Afro-pessimism.
Mm-hmm.
And I always point out the things that I see in these stories and these movies and different things like that, and what I've read or what I've heard from the Afro-pessimists. And it is just this idea of social death and just the things that it takes to remove someone from society and make them a slave, like the violence, the psychological violence, the physical violence. And it's just like, last episode, we talked about how white culture tends to suppress violence in their minds, in just the general psyche of whiteness. Violence is often suppressed to the point where if you were to ask them, they would say that they are God's shining ones.
Correct.
And so when you see stories like this, because what I want to also read in this story is it says, fellow employees at the restaurant who heard or had seen the abuse were reluctant to report it out of fear of Edwards. Janine Keynes helped put an end to Smith's abuse when she reported Edwards to authorities in October 2014. Keynes had a daughter-in-law who worked at the restaurant and got involved because she cared about Smith's safety. So basically, one of the waitresses there, she told her mother about it, and her mother reported it to a social worker. And that's how things got figured out. But this whole time from 2009 to 2014, all these people are working at this motherfucking restaurant.
And ain't nobody open their mouth and say shit. And that's crazy to think, because you talking about something, you were scared of him. How do you think that person that he was abused, how do you think he was feeling? And then it takes for one person to go tell somebody in the blow up. So that means that all those years y'all spent quote unquote scared, y'all could have told somebody to save this boy. Why, what were you scared of? You don't know how to anonymously drop a tip? What were you scared? How was he going to know you did it?
I want someone to do a deep study on this story, like collect interviews, evidence, because I feel like this is such a microcosm of slavery itself, of like these capital S slavery that happened in America, the way that they were able to hold him captive, not just physically, but mentally. And then the way that people just participated in it, like,
this is the result of white privilege. Because y'all literally knew what he was doing was wrong. Yeah, literally sat there on the sidelines and didn't take any action. But let that man would have been black. And the person he was holding captive was somebody white. Y'all wouldn't have gave a fuck about that black man that y'all was scared of him. Y'all want his ass locked the fuck up. Get him off of, get this animal out of here.
I didn't want to say it, but I'm glad you did.
And then to say that y'all was scared, what was he going to do? He wasn't beating y'all. It's no way that I can, no way humanly possible, I could literally go home every night knowing that somebody is holding someone captive against their will for no reason at all.
At my job!
That I'm going to work every day. So y'all just saw this person being abused and y'all didn't think anything of it. Y'all just kept on going with y'all lives. Y'all came to work. Y'all clocked in, clocked out, went home, spent time with y'all family. And at no point did this boy that was being held captive cross y'all mind.
I feel like it's one thing to have a boss that's like an asshole to everybody. Well, it's not okay, but like,
yeah, you know, it's a different conversation.
Right. But I can understand them being like, okay, well, should we just gonna put up with it? Cause we gotta, you know, bills needs to be paid, blah, blah, blah. But it's another thing for, I'm trying to picture me at my job in the cubicle answering the phone. And then I turn around and look over my shoulder and there's somebody chained up with an ankle chain on attached to the wall. And we all just, and every time the manager come by, she just smack them upside the head, break a keyboard on their back.
Because I'm going to be on the phone with the client, like,
take a stapler and just start stapling their arm and shit.
I'm definitely going to be like, is this him? You tripping? Like, I just,
and
I
everybody just, him. Ooh, okay.
Oh, girl, that was nothing. Don't listen to that.
And just going home and then coming back again tomorrow.
That is wild. I can't even. Edwards would have been put in his place. He would have definitely had to get put in his place. And the fact that nobody, and it's like, y'all not even saying, hey, I didn't even notice what's going on. Y'all saying, we knew. We were scared.
And the crazy thing is, if I almost said that if it had been a white person, like if Edwards had still been white and then the person that he had holding had been white, I was like, I don't know. I don't know if they would have, they probably would have been the same situation. But definitely, if Edwards had been black and the person that he had been holding captive had been white,
there would have been no need to even get anybody involved because white people would have taken it upon themselves to handle it. They would have pulled out the gun out of their waistband and hold that man at gunpoint. And if you look wrong, I might just shoot you before the police get here.
I know the food was not that good at J&J cafeteria.
And honestly, I beg to differ. I feel as if Edwards was white and the captive was white, it still would have been a different story. Because everyone is granted sympathy except for black people. And we've said this on a previous episode that for some reason in their little brains, they feel as if black people do not receive pain. As if we do not, like we had some disconnection to our emotions where we do not feel any pain. We don't suffer. We don't anything.
I think psychologically that goes back to the fact that they suppress violence. And so it's like whenever they're doing it, it's like they have to call it something else so that they don't recognize what they're doing as violent. You know what I mean? It's like if I'm doing something to someone and I'm not telling myself this, but I'm telling, oh, this is helping them. This is making them a better person. Or, oh, they just need to straighten up. They don't know what they're doing or something like that.
They should then be thanking able to, me.
Then they're able to, they shouldn't, then they're able to justify that they shouldn't feel pain because I'm what, because what I'm doing to them shouldn't be causing them pain.
Well, let me hold your hand over this fire and see if you feel anything.
And that's when, and, see, and then when the niggas jump back up, that's when, oh my God.
Oh my God. What's wrong with you, animal?
They're so violent. That's what it goes to.
Let me do the same thing you've done to me to you, and we see if it's the same conversation. And I think there's also that disconnect as well. They do not see us as having any value, mm-hmm. so they never put themselves in our shoes. Because what shoes? Mm. There's no shoes to put myself in. Mm. We're not the same. Mm. You don't receive information like I do.
Well, with that being said, I don't know if it's good news or not, but of course, John Edwards was convicted. I think he served like 4 or 5 years or something. I don't know, not enough. And he did have to pay like $500,000 to him or something like that. I don't know, still not enough, but you know, that's the world we live in. And the reason that we're talking about that is because on this episode, as we're celebrating Juneteenth, we want to discuss slavery. And not, we don't want to just discuss slavery. We want to discuss how Juneteenth is a celebration of the end of slavery, but the slaves were not all freed during Juneteenth. In fact, there were some that were enslaved into the 1960s, possibly even later. So as everybody in the world was getting back to things, modernizing, buying refrigerators and having electricity put into their homes and modern plumbing, we still had people who were by all means mentally, physically enslaved. In the same way that Mr. Smith had been captured and held captive at that restaurant, there were whole populations of people who were living the same way. And possibly still today, right now, probably.
In some back barn.
And the crazy thing is, it don't even have to be at a back barn. It can be right in public at the restaurant that you know people is going to. Because that's a, you know, that's an old country rinky-dink redneck restaurant that they go to every day for lunch, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah, that was definitely very public. So you're right. You're definitely right about that. That was very public. Because if I'm going to do it in plain sight, y'all ain't going to do nothing. Mm. What's the point of me putting them in the barn?
Exactly.
I just put a chain right around their neck and walk them.
Might as well. You got tongue marks on them. So let's briefly talk about the history of Juneteenth. Do you want to let them know what it is and where it started?
Absolutely. So I know this Juneteenth, you're probably going to be out with your people. Mm-hmm. Listening to some good music, eating on some good food, smoking on some good something, having a good old time.
A good old Negro time.
As you should. So, through the history of Juneteenth, it's an annual holiday on June 19th, our great-grandfather's birthday, shout out to him, celebrating the emancipation of enslaved African Americans. Juneteenth was originated in Galveston, Texas in 1866. The Emancipation Proclamation was read by Abraham Lincoln on January 1st, 1863, declaring that all enslaved persons in the Confederate States of America in rebellion and not in union hands were freed. However, not all slaves were freed instantly on that date because of the Confederate resistance.
Yes, so once again, history repeats itself. So you had the Civil War that's just about wrapped up. Slaves are supposed to be freed, and you got these goddamn ashen-ankled
wooden teeth.
These niggas didn't even have wooden teeth. They was toothless them around that motherfucker. No teeth. Corn eating. Whiskey drinking. That old backwoods creek whiskey.
Tobacco spitting.
Straw hat wearing. Mud cake between the toes having. whip crackers.
Mm.
Just like when we had Biden get voted in, then white people said, we're not. No, we don't recognize this. Same thing. Civil War happened. President said, clear all that slavery shit up out of here. We're packing it up. They said, no, it didn't happen.
He don't run me.
So the motherfucking president had to send a general down throughout. He sent, you know, people all over the country to enforce these new motherfucking rules. So on June 19th, 1865, Union Major General Gordon Granger arrived on the island of Galveston to enforce the laws. He went all throughout Galveston reading the proclamation number. Reading General Order Number 3, which is basically declaring that the slaves had been freed. He went to three different spots, and the last of which was a Negro church.
Mm.
And so this is where we get the date Juneteenth, June 19th from. So although this event has come to be celebrated as the end of slavery, black people remained enslaved, especially in two Union border states, Delaware and Kentucky. It wasn't until December 18, 1865, when the ratification of the 13th Amendment was announced, which was the official end all period on the dot, saying that slavery as we know it was over. But as we also know from Ava DuVernay,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean that slavery ended. More so just change forms. So anyways, so even though legally all enslaved people had been freed by the 13th Amendment, white landowners were able to trick illiterate and unlearned blacks into servitude. And that just reminded me of an old Negroism that my mom, grandma, grandmother have all said. If there is anything a white man don't want a nigga to know, they will put it in writing. So with that being said, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with the story of how black people were enslaved well into the 1960s.
The man they were visiting is May Miller's father. His name is Cain Wall, believed by the family to be 105 years old. He's been hospitalized for the past several months after suffering a heart attack. Mr. Wall is also part of the class action suit in Chicago filed on behalf of the 35 million African Americans who are descendants of slaves. Class action suits are always stronger when the plaintiffs include someone whose personal experience dramatically illustrates the wrong that's been done.
Really,
it does not get more dramatic than the story May and her sister Annie told about life as slaves in Emmett County, Mississippi.
Picking cotton, pulling corn, picking peas, picking butter beans, picking string beans, digging potatoes, whatever it was, that's what you did for no money at all.
How old were you when this started?
I was 5 when I was working.
Their story, which we have not confirmed independently, is not, however, unheard of. Justice Department records tell of prosecutions well into the 20th century of whites who continue to keep blacks in, quote, involuntary servitude, coercing them with threats on their lives, exploiting their ignorance of life and the laws beyond the plantation they were born into. The sisters say that's how it happened to them. They were born in the 1930s and 40s into a world where their father had already been forced into slave labor.
I'm so mad I ran away, but they sent, told my brothers they better come get me. I ran to a place even worse than where I was. But the people told my brothers, they, yo, you better go get her. They come got me, and he brought me back. So I thought Daddy could do something about that. You know, I told him someone run away again. He said, baby, don't run away. They'll kill us. So I didn't try it no more.
How old were you when you ran away?
I was 9.
You were nine.
Mm-hmm. They beat us. Like I said, they didn't feed us. We had to go drink water at the creek. We ate like hogs. We didn't eat like dogs, because they do bring a dog to a certain place to feed dogs. We didn't have that.
You're saying they treated their dogs better than they treated you?
Yes, sir.
Gentlemen, as I cannot read or write, I got a friend to write this. I never in school in my life. I worked on this man's farm all my life. I didn't get a cent for my labor until I ran away. I am 35 years old.
This letter resides in the Library of Congress, and there are many others like it, archived through the early 20th century by the NAACP. We told political scientist Ron Walters, who is an advocate for slavery reparations, the story of the two sisters we'd met in Louisiana.
I think a lot of Americans will hear this story and say, that can't be. That's unbelievable. But you believe it.
I believe it because it is plausible. One of the things I think we know is that these letters tell us that a lot of these places that they were kept in bondage or semi-bondage conditions in the 20th century were out of the way places where the certainly with the law authorities.
Ain't got no home, ain't got no shoes, ain't got no money, ain't got no class, ain't got no skirts, ain't got no sweaters, ain't got no perfume, ain't got no love, ain't got no faith. I ain't got no culture, ain't got no mother, ain't got no father, ain't got no brother, ain't got no children, ain't got no aunts, ain't got no uncles, ain't got no love, ain't got no mind. I ain't got no country, ain't got no schooling, ain't got no friends, ain't got no nothing. Ain't got no water, ain't got no air,
You are now listening to Outside the Culture.
I must be protected!
And we're back.
Dres, what did you think of that clip?
What stood out to me in that clip again and again, and something that I keep saying that has been standing out to me a lot lately, is the point where the interviewer says, well, you know, there's people out there that aren't going to believe this. And I'm just always like, what is this? Why is it so hard for white people to believe that they are violent? Like, there's always such a disbelief. Like, well, that couldn't have happened. Yes. Have y'all not seen y'all? It could. Am I getting too close to white and black? Oh, okay.
I just, after seeing that was definitely very heartbreaking. To think that those people were being treated like that. And it just hurts because it's like, it's just mind blowing because it's like, y'all trying to whitewash slavery right out of the history. And it's everywhere. It's everywhere. We're not forgetting about slavery.
Y'all trying to hide the fact that slavery happened at the same time as still having the slaves.
No, we didn't do this to y'all.
While doing it.
With a slave in the kitchen.
One thing that also stands out to me is I remember during the George Floyd protests. Mm-hmm. Char, you remember I told you I had to have that conversation with my roommate.
Mm-hmm.
Over race and all these different things. And it was just like, I don't know if white people, well, it's not, I don't know. White people do not have a grasp on slavery. On the impact that slavery had on the residue that's left behind.
White people are the ones that are doing it, but then also acting like they don't know what's going on. Like they don't see the systems put in place to disadvantage black people. Like they don't see the effects of what slavery has done to us. They believe that the reason that we are in the positions that we are in is because of ourselves.
Yes. Well, let's get into it. So the story that we're going to be discussing today is called Black People in the U.S. Were Enslaved Well into the 1960s. It was written by Antoinette Harrell, and it's featured on Vice. So, you know, Vice always got some interesting stories. So the information that we're going to be giving to you all today is from this beautiful black woman who was doing some research on her own family. And came across, to talk about swept under the rug.
Just digging and finding everything out.
So let's get into it.
All right, y'all. So more than 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, there were black people in the Deep South who had no idea they were free. These people were forced to work, violently tortured, and raped. Historian and genealogist Antoinette Harrell has uncovered cases of African Americans still living as slaves 100 years after the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation. The 57-year-old Louisiana native has dedicated more than 20 years to peonage research. Through her work, she's unearthed painful stories in southern states like Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Florida. Antoinette began researching her own family in 1994. She found a record of her ancestors in an 1853 inventory list belonging to Benjamin and Cecilia Bankston Richardson, written down alongside other personal belongings that included spoons, forks, hogs, cows, and a sofa were her great-great-grandparents, Thomas and Carrie Richardson.
Can we pause right there? Oh, my God.
You trying to flag me down?
No, I'm just like, just imagine seeing your ancestors written down like furniture.
No, this is the part that kills me, the part that's coming next.
Well, the amount. Yes.
But just to think, honestly, it's like a bittersweet moment because it's sad as hell to have that information and see it with your own eyes, but it is a blessing within our own culture to even have documentation of that moment, because so much of us, or so many of us, don't even have anything from our ancestors. So it's like, I'm so happy that she has that, because I wish I had that for my people as well. But then to see on paper the truths of slavery, like, we know slavery happened, and even though they try to make us believe it didn't happen, to have that, or have a piece of artifact from that time period, whew.
It reminds me of what we talked about on the True Crime Volume 1 episode, where in the white mentality, black people became objects, you know?
Absolutely.
And so, like, I don't know. I thought that was just...
And then, do you hear what she said? It was amongst items.
Yes. Spoons, forks, hogs, cows, and a sofa. And right next to them was her great-grandparents written in, like they were a side table and a rocker chair.
Purchases.
With receipts. Proof of sale. Mm-hmm. Let's get back into it.
Whew. Carrie and her child Thomas had been appraised at $1,100. $1,100, y'all.
Wait, let me see if I can do the math. What do y'all think that would be worth today?
Whew.
Let me go to the inflation calculator.
Ooh. I'm going to say
$1.1 million. That sounds high, but I don't know.
I'm going to say $100,000.
Ooh.
Well, it was already $1,000, so equivalent to that.
Damn, they only go back to 1913. Okay, well, let's go back to 1913. Because back then, they
was using, what, like, coins and whatnot? So them coins was worth, like,
$5. $1,100 in 1913 would equal $31,000 today.
That's not... So, okay, so double that, that would mean they would be only like, what,
$60,000? Mm-hmm. So it would be about $60,000 for the set. That's honestly, that's cheaper than a house today, in today's prices.
Slaves was cheap though. Like, slaves was cheap labor. So, like, I definitely don't see them, that inflation mm-hmm. calculation going to a million. That's an expensive slave. Seeing my ancestors' perceived value written on a piece of paper changed me. It also set forth the direction of my life. It was terribly painful, but I needed to know more. What did they do after emancipation in 1863? Where did they go? I tracked down freedmen contracts of the Hero side of my family that proved that they were sharecroppers. Words started spreading around New Orleans about how I was using genealogy to connect the dots of lost history. Soon enough, people started requesting that I came and spoke about how I was uncovering my family's story so they could do the same for themselves. It became a chance to find out who we were and where we came from as descendants of enslaved people. This was a chance to learn a history you were never taught in school.
Mm.
And that's important because... Mm. There's rare avenues that black people can even go to even find out anything and it be legit information. And then to know that these people were coming together, that's a lesson right there. You want to go fast, go alone.
Mm.
You want to go far, go with someone.
Mm-hmm. And this makes me think about, you know, all those laws that they've been passing lately, especially the ones where they're trying to get certain subjects and topics taken out of schools.
They were throwing the whole entire, like, African studies out of the curriculum. They're not teaching about slavery anymore. They're about to stop teaching about slavery.
Mm-hmm.
They were already providing a whitewashed version of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to remove that as well. It's just so many little things. I wouldn't even say that's a little thing. That's a very big thing, but we're supposed to look at it like it's small. It'd be so many little opportunities that they take to take or whitewash black people from history. And if you're looking at one thing, you're like, okay, that's not big of a deal. You look at another thing, that's not a big deal. But when you start to remove us slowly but surely, overall and over time, it does become a big deal, because it's pretty much like black people have to switch to homeschooling for their kids to get a decent understanding of what's really going on.
And it's like, I think about like that video of that girl, you know, the kids had got out of the school, they were protesting, and they the girl's on that fucking pedestal talking about some other fucking, you know, because it was Martin Luther King, and if he hadn't come and freed all the slaves, then we'd still be being beat. All of us.
Yosoa High School had a walkout today, and this little girl had said this.
I am so glad that years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King, the first black man, ended slavery. Because if not, people would be whipped every day for the thousands.
A white, just a little white girl. Just, you know. And so I feel like these laws, they're effective.
This is crazy. One day, Antoinette was approached by a woman familiar with her work, and the lady told her, I know a group of people who didn't receive their freedom until the 1950s. The 1950s, y'all. My mother was born in 1975. So 25 years before that, it was slaves. And then we have a couple slaves here and there now. Antoinette went to the lady's home and met about 20 people who had worked at the Waterford Plantation in St. Charles Parish, Louisiana. One way or another, they had become indebted to the plantation's owner and were not allowed to leave the property. This situation had them living their lives as 20th century slaves. At the end of the harvest, when they tried to settle up with the owner, they were always told they didn't make it into the black and to try again next year. Every passing year, the workers fell deeper and deeper in debt. Some of those folks were tied to that land into the 1960s. 15 years before my mother was born. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Most shocking of all was their fear. I saw time and time again, people were afraid to share their stories. They were afraid to give this information to me, even behind closed doors decades later. They believed that they might somehow get sent back to that plantation that wasn't even operating anymore. As I would realize, people are afraid to share their stories because in the South, so many of the same white families who own these plantations are still running local government and big businesses. They still hold the power. So the poor and disenfranchised really don't have anywhere to share their injustices without fearing major repercussions. To most folks, it just isn't the risk. It just isn't worth the risk. So sadly, most situations of this sort go unreported. That's crazy. That is psychological warfare. The plantation ain't even around no more, and the people are still afraid to say what happened to them. They're scared to tell their story of something that happened to them, because they are afraid of what other people might do. That is insane.
Part of this idea of social death, you know, that we talk about when we talk about slavery and sort of what makes slavery slavery, with social death as the slave, you don't have any connections to the world. So there's no safe space for you. There's nowhere that you can go that anyone is going to have the power to take up for you. And so when I think about these people, and like, not even, like you said, not even on that plantation anymore. And but that plantation is in their mind. Right. And it has such a hold on them that they can't even break out of something that they're not even experiencing.
But But I think that also goes back to the conversation that we were having earlier. How can you forget something when it's constantly happening to you? Like, people don't understand how traumatizing experiences can be.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is after the fact. You know, they're in their own homes. Like, could you imagine the type of nightmares they're probably having?
Mm-hmm.
The type of social anxiety that they're having, mm-hmm. just going around and being around people. Because when something bad happens to you, and it's something that happened to so many other people, who would you turn to save you? Who are you going to feel like can save you when nobody saved you and you were going through it?
Mm.
Why would I believe that you could save me when nobody came to save me?
Just like that man working at that restaurant.
Who could I turn to? I had people that saw me every day in this environment. And I know that has to play like a psychological trick on people to think that, well, damn, am I tripping? Is this okay?
And that's what they be talking about in social death when they talk about how the slave was isolated from the rest of society.
Isolation
and what that
is
does
key.
To the mind, what that does to how people view you, how you view yourself. And then the only access that you have to the world is through your master. Who decides what you eat, who you're married to, who you sleep with.
What you think of yourself.
What you think of yourself. Mm.
That's why it's a limit on how many days a person can stay in solitary confinement.
Child, if they follow in the rules.
6 months later, Antoinette was giving a lecture on a genealogy and reparations in Amite, Louisiana, where she met May Lewis Walls Miller. May walked up to her after the lecture and said, "I didn't get my freedom until 1963.
Hmm. And can I just say that May Lewis Walls Miller, that is a name. They don't make them names like that no more.
That's a four-namer. I got a four-namer. They ain't doing that no more.
Mm. Well, let's talk about May. In the video that we showed, you know, the last video clip that we just watched, that was May. That was talking about how she was picking corn and butter beans and all that. That was May. The man that was in that hospital bed, that was her father. And so May's father, Cain Wall, lost his land by signing a contract he couldn't read that had sealed his entire family's fate. As a young girl, May didn't know that her family's situation was different from anyone else's. The family didn't have TV, so May just assumed everyone lived the same way her brothers and sisters did. They were not permitted to leave the land and were subject to regular beatings from the landowners. When May got a bit older, she would be told to come to work in the main house with her mother. And trigger warning here. Here, she would be raped by whatever men were present. Most times, she and her mother were raped simultaneously alongside each other. Her father, Cain, couldn't take the suffering anymore and tried to flee the property by himself in the middle of the night. His plan was to register for the army and get stationed far away. He was picked up by some folks claiming they would help him. Instead, they took him right back to the farm where he was brutally beaten in front of his family. When May was about 14, she decided she would no longer go up to the house. Her family pleaded with her as the punishment would come down on all of them. May refused and sassed the farm owner's wife when she told her to work. Worrying that May would be killed by the owners, Cain beat his own daughter bloody in hopes of saving her. That evening, still covered in blood, May ran away through the woods. She was hiding in the bushes by the road when a family rode by with their mule cart. The lady on the cart saw the bush moving, and she got off to find May crying, bloodied, and terrified. That white family took her in and rescued the rest of the Walls later that night. And I just want to pause right there before we go forward. All of this is going on. First of all of this is going on as the world, again, is color TV by now. people sit at home and watch sitcoms with TV dinners by now. And whole time, not just one person, not just two people.
A whole family.
A whole fucking family. And then to think that it happened, this man was on his own land and lost his land because he couldn't understand the contract. And that one mistake brought years of torment, pain.
That one mistake brought him back into slavery. And that, and just his daughters and his wife. Whew.
Okay, don't be, you know, it's like you're running. I always think like, okay, I'm going to run. Like if I ever have to like run away, if I get away, I feel like I'm going to be so hesitant about like whose car I get into, because there's always those movies where like people get help and then the people be like, yeah, I'm going to take you by the sheriff's office. Next thing you know, they pulling right back into the motherfucking place that you just had to fight your fucking life to get out of. And to think that that happened to that man in real life, the fact that he was even about to just run away and abandon his family and just join the military.
Then they brought him back to the plantation. Not you lied and said you was going to help me. You see me in distress.
That is crazy.
Being your daughter to a bloody pulp to save her life is crazy. And then we have this concept of tough love. And I wonder if it derives from those moments. Because growing up, parents always be saying, I'm gonna beat you so the world don't have to.
Okay. Oh my God. Let's save that for another episode.
That was too much.
Oh, that was deep.
Oh my God. No, but they do be saying that. Like, I wonder.
They do.
It's my job to. Okay. You jumping back in?
Kids running all over the place. It's like Spirit of Rod.
That comes all the way back. Spirit of the Rod goes all the way back to.
See what the Christianity done.
Spirit of the Rod is Christian.
Yes, it's from the Bible. See?
It's too much.
Who is really the plantation master? And you're going to find out when I debut my essay series on www.outsidetheculture.com.
Stay tuned.
Okay, let's jump back in for real. Okay. So after all of that, Antoinette, which is the lady that was doing the research, she eventually met May's 107-year-old father, Cain, and some of May's siblings. They spoke about the horrors on the farm. Speaking of the suppressed memories was hard on Cain, and after telling the stories, he was afraid someone was going to take him back to the plantation. The stress sent Cain to the hospital. So when you see Cain in the hospital bed in that video clip, that was why. Because he was stressed out after talking about his experiences on the plantation. Think about that.
Going back down memory lane almost killed that man.
That, when the memory alone is enough.
That's what I'm saying. I know they have had to be having nightmares.
Beyond nightmares.
Waking up in terrors. Sweating. Yes,
it was giving night terrors. Antoinette and May became good friends. They lectured together. And this was before May ended up passing in 2014. By getting to know May, she got to know some of May's PTSD responses. Like there were times where she couldn't stop eating because of the years she spent not knowing when the next meal would come. Or how May would sometimes be compelled to remove her shoes as she had not grown up wearing them and she felt that they were uncomfortable. Antoinette felt like she was getting glimpses into what life may have been like for our ancestors who endured slavery. And then Antoinette says herself in this beautiful article that she has written about her experience, she says, "Do I believe May's family was the last to be freed? No. Slavery will continue to redefine itself for African Americans for years to come. The school-to-prison pipeline and private penitentiaries are just a few of the new ways to guarantee that Black people provide free labor for the system at large."
Modern-day slavery.
Mm. So when we talk about Juneteenth and celebrating, I feel like, for me, I feel like Juneteenth... Well, I honestly feel like just at this point in my life, like all of the Black holidays are just a moment of reverence. Like, yes, it's a moment to celebrate Blackness and, you know, the cultures that we have today and eat our foods and different things like that. But for me, I always have to meditate on just the experiences that the ancestors had. I'm talking about ancestors way back then. And the ancestors that we had just a few generations ago.
Our entire bloodlines. Just to see how far we've come and what we've endured as a people and how we continue to just move forward and keep progressing outside of all of the adversities that we face. I think Juneteenth is a day, but it is our day to be with our people, to love on ourselves, to see how far we've come. Because we... don't often, as Black people, get those moments to just sit back and smell the flowers. And in this case, it's not all flowers. It's hardship upon hardship upon hardship to get us to where we are today. And we still have yet to go. But I think it's a moment for us. And I think as we do continue to celebrate these holidays, the few that we have, like Black History Month, Juneteenth, Black music, you know, LGBTQ plus community pride, like these moments is our moments to not only, you know, have admiration and love and support for our people, but to also reflect on where we've come from, to know that it is possible for us to still go farther.
The more opportunities I get, you know, because, you know, as you get older, you just have more and more opportunities to choose how you want to live your life, how you want to do certain things. And like, as I think about, like, you know, when I was younger versus now, like one, like for example, like one thing that I love is, you know, just the way that the old Black people talk.
Chow.
Yes, I love a good chow, a sat so down.
So soulful.
I love a good, and like, I just feel like, The ways that I honor them as I get older, whether it be through Juneteenth or any other holiday, I think is to continue doing those things that they did and do them in a way, do them consciously. Because it's like, it's one thing for, you know, a certain slang or a certain recipe or something like that to be passed down to you. You just do it because that's what you've done. But it's another thing to... you know, to do it with intention, like, you know.
I'm choosing Black.
Yeah.
I'm choosing my people.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Yeah.
I definitely feel where you're coming from.
So I feel like that's my way of celebrating. 365.
And I think that's the way I want it to be. I want to pour into my community, and that community pours back into me, and we pour into others. And I want Black people to have the opportunity to have longevity, to have real community and real love and support for each other, like so many other races have. And I don't want Black people to have it because other people have it. I want Black people to have it because Black people deserve it. They deserve to feel like my community got me, and I got my community.
So with that being said, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our media picks.
All right, y'all. So for everyone who wants to keep up with us and know everything that we're working on with all the great ideas that we've shared with you, make sure you keep in touch with us on all of our OTC socials. On Instagram, we can be found at OTC Network. On our website, we can be found at www.outsidetheculture.com. Mm. That's where you can get all our latest news and our latest posts. So make sure you check that out. And then, of course, if you want to send a few dollars to make us holler, our Cash App can be found at $outsidetheculture. Again, that is $outsidetheculture. We appreciate all the love and support that we get.
Amen.
And I should say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round.
All right.
And we're back.
Do you want me to go first for media pick?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so y'all, for this media pick, I'm choosing a song that represents what I want for me and my people.
Mm.
You know, sometimes a song is used to inspire me when I'm feeling a little down. So I'm just going to play it.
Take me under. I don't know. Imagine smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue behind my waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot, my son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state for a plate. Knowledge, if coke was cooked without the garbage, we'd all have the top dollars. Imagine everybody flashing. Fashion, designer clothes. Lacing your click up with diamond rolls. Your people's holding dough, no parole, no rubbers. Going raw, imagine law with no undercovers. Just some thoughts for the mind. I take a glimpse into time. Watch the blimp read, the world is mine.
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all my sons. I love them, baby. Black diamonds and pearls.
Could it be, if you could be mine, we both shine. If I rule the
world. Okay, so for my song, I'm not even going to tell you what it is. You're just going to know it when you hear it.
Let the beat roll.
Definitely a fun little pick. Was there anything else?
I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate you guys. Thanks for coming back. And if you are going to be celebrating your Juneteenth, if you're getting the day off of work, if you want to take the day off from work, the OTC podcast definitely supports calling in and taking a day for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You support that message?
Mm-hmm.
I'm for that. Okay. But yes, if you're going to be celebrating with the family, you know, enjoy yourselves. Be safe. We love you. And we'll be back.
We'll be back, y'all. Stay tuned. And we're out of here.